Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from that great college, York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this December 6th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM, that's WBAI, on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College radio station is plugged in to Vantage Point, and we're delighted that they are. Well, today we have hopefully a very informative show. Our monthly State of Newark report will be coming up shortly. We're honored to have Rahkhaman Mohammed, who is the deputy mayor of the city of Newark, on for this month. And then we're going to talk about the status of H.R. 40 and the reparations movement. Cam Howard, who is the national co-chair of the organization in COBRA, the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America, will be joining us. Let us know where we are. And where we are is in a pretty good place, but we need more mobilization, more organization in order to push forward. Before we get started, I just want to once again go out on the limb and get my whipping from those in the audience who are vax hesitant, and which is okay, or vax deniers, which is okay, or vax avoiders, which is okay. I am not. Just got my booster shot, my wife and I. Yesterday, actually, got Johnson & Johnson. That was our preferred choice. We didn't want to cross-pollinate or whatever you might call it. I went to a nice pop-up station. It wasn't a pop-up station, but it was a bus, a substation that was pulled up in our community. And it was quite efficient, quite effective, and we're delighted to now have those booster shots ready to go and ready to be a part of the solution as best we can. At a minimum, what I'm asking people to do is mask up. At a minimum. If you don't want to get the vaccination, I wish you would, but if you don't, fine. But we do know that masking helps. Masking is effective. So we really want to look out for each other, protect each other. So we're just asking people, would they just be kind enough to just wear masks? I was in Atlanta the other day, and, just people just walking around with no mask on and so forth and so on. Not only are they susceptible, whether they believe it or not, of getting the COVID, the Delta variant is out there. They're saying that the Omicron variant may not be as severe, but it spreads more rapidly, which means the consequences are the same in terms of hospitalizations and various other things. But it's bad. The other thing is we really, really need to get past vax inequality in the world. But at least masking helps. And I'm glad when you get on an airplane, if you go to the airport, you ain't got no choice. Or a train. You have to have your mask on. Or you can't ride. So, at least at a minimum, mask up as a way of actually moving forward. I have actually not done what I'm supposed to do in terms of my connectivity, in terms of our guests checking in, but our deputy mayor should be checking in just a minute to let us know. I actually have a way of communicating that, or having our sidekick and producer, studio guy per excellence, Reggie, connect with us, but I left my cell phone in the kitchen. So perhaps my wife, Mary Rance Daniel, will bring my cell phone to me and I can turn it on and have our method of communications laid out. But we do expect Rahkhaman Mohammed to connect with us and to discuss our state of Newark, New Jersey. The first of every month, we have Rahkhaman Mohammed on to share with us. We have the Honorable Rajay Baraka on typically to share with us what's happening in the great city of Newark, because we really believe that Newark is a city that has very progressive policies. And as a result, we want to continue to focus on those policies because we think that it's important for cities and mayors and cities around the country to emulate those policies. And so we continue to, by we, I mean the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, continues to have various programs, initiatives in Newark, big reparations, a gentrification summit that we had, an economic development program that we had there, State of the Black World Conference, which was awesome, absolutely awesome, which we did there. And we're looking to do another emergency gentrification summit coming up very soon. So I now see that our deputy mayor is on. I had to get my device in order to get that confirmation. So Deputy Mayor Rahman Mohammed, please welcome to Vantage Point.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, your volume is a little low. Are you on a speaker?
I'm on a speakerphone. Hold on.
Yeah, can you hear?
Can you hear me better now?
Anyway, delighted to have you on the show, sir. Before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm just being acquainted with you. I've had an opportunity to meet some of the cabinet members with the Honorable Raj J. Baraka, whom we're working very closely with. So are you originally from, we used to say back in the day, Newark, or do you hail from other parts? Just give us a little background.
I'm born and raised in the city of Newark. Grew up in the Central Ward. Well, I really probably lived in every ward. Mostly grew up in the Central Ward. I was a labor leader prior to me being deputy mayor. I've been with Mayor Baraka now since 1994. When he first ran for mayor, we've connected, been supporting him since then. Since 2014, when he was elected, I retired from the union and came to work full-time for Mayor Baraka.
So you say a labor leader. What union were you associated with?
I was SEIU president. I was the state president, the local president, and at the time, the international officer, too.
Oh, that's a great union. That union, SEIU 1199, hosts our Pan-African Unity Dialogue. Martin Luther King considered that union, as you well know, one of the most, he considered it that was his union. And he was very, very proud of that. So talk to us about your portfolio in general before we get into the specifics of the WOW program. Deputy Mayor, what's in your portfolio?
My portfolio? I mean, other than me being a labor leader and, now currently deputy mayor responsible assistant, the workers, the residents of the city and obtaining jobs, that's my goal, trying to help the residents, trying to make sure that the unemployment rate in the city of Newark comes down, that we get people trained into the workforce and given opportunities that are being brought up by the new development, and that is happening within the city, which is, valued at billions of dollars. And so my job is to try to ensure residents get opportunities.
Right. Well, that's what I meant by portfolio, was just what are your various duties within your department. So let's move right ahead to our audience. There is a very powerful program which I read about and which Shoshana Page, the policy advisor to the mayor, shared the information with us. It's called WOW. So WOW, WOW us with what WOW is all about.
WOW is actually a brainchild of mine since 2014. I'm sure you've interviewed our mayor on numerous occasions. He's very progressive, and he's also, someone who pushes his directors to come up with out-of-box ideas to assist the residents of the city. And so since 2014, I've been pushing, trying to find another way to bring services to the residents of the city. We have a workforce office downtown Newark on Broad Street. I mean, it's accessible through transportation, but a lot of people still don't utilize the office or actually come to the office within the city. And so I decided, maybe let's create a mobile workforce bus. I mean, we have mobile health buses. We have even mobile libraries. We got a mobile police station. Why not create a mobile workforce, which is workforce on wheels? That's what WOW comes from. And so, I've been attempting to get a bus for the last almost 8 years, I was actually given a police vehicle, a van that was utilized for parades and big events. It used to be used for arresting people back in the day, and I was given that vehicle in, I think, probably about 3 years ago to convert it to a workforce. I did. It actually wound up happening to be probably one of the best tools or requested tools in my department. But what I realized, it wasn't enough. It still was not giving me the space, the area that I needed to assist the residents. And so I kept on trying to raise money. I finally got a developer to agree to make a contribution. And now we have a nice, beautiful Wild Bus, that Workforce on Wheels, 30 foot long, 11 stations, interview room, handicap accessible, all the modern technology that you need to go into the community. It's out in the community today, by the way, and get people a system and finding jobs and finding, more importantly to me, training programs so they can find careers.
Right. So how you say it's out in the community today. So yes. Do you do advance advertisements about when it's coming into a certain community, or you just sort of roll up and then maybe make some announcements and people show up? How does it actually work?
So we have two ways that we're going to utilize the bus. One is will be advance notice, but one is also with individuals requesting the vehicle to be at certain places. So we also partner with the community. Today, we actually partner with New Community Corporation, who wanted to do a program and highlight training programs that they offer in the community. And so they have requested the bus, and so we brought the bus to the community today to try to get individuals signed up to different training programs. But yes, we will be in the future. We have hotspots in the city of Newark that has been identified by the police department. The mayor has asked that every department within the city create some services within, or bring services within these hotspots. And so workforce contribution is the vehicle. So what we're going to do is we're going to engage employers that's looking for workers. We will leaflet the area a week prior, and then we will, the week of the interviews, we will bring our staff there to actually train and get people prepared to be interviewed, and then we'll have about 2 or 3 days where the company hopefully will interview the residents.
To our listening audience, you are listening to Rahman Muhammad. He's the deputy mayor for the city of New York, and he's describing the Workforce on Wheels program. It's called WOW. His portfolio is primarily devoted to trying to assist residents to gain employment, to get workforce training and things of those things along those lines. And after having to use a vehicle that was maybe stigmatized because it used to arrest people, now he's had a developer donate a very beautiful bus that has spaces on it for people to actually do interviews on the bus, but also to go in various communities. And it is really typical of Mayor Baraka's challenge for people to, as he says, think outside of the box and to be people-centered and people-oriented. If the people don't come to us, go to the people. And that's what I like really about the attitude of this administration. And, of course, Brother Rahman Muhammad has talked about his background as a labor leader, and I'm sure that helps, because if you're organizing as a labor leader, you have to really roll up your sleeves and get down with the people. So we're delighted to have him with us this afternoon. So, Mr. Deputy Mayor, would you be kind enough to sort of talk to us about some of the successes that are taking place? I mean, how is this working? Do you have, are people responding? And if they are responding, what are some of the programs that you're referring them to? Do you have examples of maybe employers saying right on and workers saying right on? How's it working out?
So on this vehicle, we just launched it a week ago. We did have an employee that is a city-based called Fabi Wood, who actually came on, did interviews, and hired individuals during the launch. They did an interview with Channel 11 and told them, listen, this will help us get, workers for us to fill up the slots. I mean, right now, as you know, across this country, it's really kind of hard to get people into employment. A lot of people aren't just coming out are looking for work, you're going to have to actually go out there and get them. And our workforce office has been closed for over a year now. And so people don't even have the ability to come down to workforce because the state has yet to actually give us permission to open up the office full time to allow for residents to come in. And so this gives me an opportunity to go out to the community. I mean, if you want to go based on the past vehicle, I mean, it worked out very well. That's why I wanted to make sure I got a much larger vehicle. Oh, and I just wanted to correct one thing. The developer actually made a donation. The bus is actually a brand new bus that, you know, that we built. So he actually made a sizable donation for us to actually purchase the vehicle.
Right.
But in the past, when we first created the WOW program, which has been going on for probably the last 3 years, the programs are going on for about 3 years. I mean, one of the great things, as I said before, one of the most requested tools in workforce was that vehicle. I mean, we wrapped that vehicle, the inside, we converted it into to make it look like a workforce. So it actually didn't have any of the jail type of equipment that was used previously for parades and festivals and stuff. It actually was, you know, I was given this vehicle that it wasn't being utilized no more. It was taken out the fleet, and it was pretty much gutted, and we just furnished it with workforce equipment. And we took it in the community, and, I mean, the response was great. I mean, we used to have lines outside of this vehicle.
Oh, wonderful.
Individual, yeah, trying to get employment. But like I said, it didn't give me what I needed, which was really the space, the capacity, to be able to absorb all of the folks that wanted to come out into the community. I mean, listen, the other day, I took the bus out before the drive. I mean, our driver just started today. But I was driving the bus, and I just wanted to show my staff, you know, what it could do. And so I just parked it in a parking lot at one of our hotspots. And you should have seen the people that just came out and, you know, wanted to get information, wanted to apply for jobs, wanted to talk about training. I mean, one of the, you know, I'm going to give you a low-level training program. A lot of our residents do SOAR, which is a security license you got to get with the state. We can actually do that on the bus now.
Oh, wow.
In addition to, I'm not going to do regular SOAR license. I'm going to do license where they can become armed guards. Because if you can get a SOAR license, you can also get a gun permit. So what's right. The sense of getting a regular SOAR license when you can go get the armed service license? And you can do armed or unarmed guard, and you can go and apply for your gun license and become an armed security guard. So right. There's a difference of being making $15 an hour to making $25 an hour.
Right, right.
So, yes, that's some of the things we're going to do. In addition, one of the things that I'm going to do is I'm calling right now the fast food places around the city that hire 16 and 17-year-olds, and I'm pulling up with the bus after school in front of these high schools and we can get these folks to come and recruit them. I mean, these kids need something to do. It's the young folks that's getting in trouble. They need something to do. And so, yeah, I'm going to pull up in the neighborhoods and after school and have a McDonald's or a Burger King or a Taco Bell or whoever want to get on the bus and do interviews and say, hey, here's some opportunities for you to do something other than just hanging out in the neighborhood.
Right. All right. Well, let me just say that we're wowed by the program.
I'm sorry if I had received your call.
Got a technical glitch here. Hold on 1 second.
As possible. Please speak slowly and clearly, and you have a good and productive day. Thank you.
It's a busy organizer, and sometimes I forget to do all the things that I need to do in order to
delete all old messages, press delete again.
All right.
All old messages deleted.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I forgot. I didn't cut my phone off, and so therefore, well, I mean, goodness, they're harassing me. Anyway, the one thing I wanted to say was this is WOW. It's a great program, and of course, we were delighted to have you on today. Give us some information in terms of how people can contact you.
So if people want to contact me, they should contact my office, 973-733-3705. If they contact that office, then we can assist them with if folks want to request the vehicle. And if people are interested in training programs or job placement, you can also request that number for that Our offices are, you know what I'm saying, we're doing appointments right now, so you can still call in reference to job placements and job training. But if you want to request the job, the Wild Bus, you can make that phone call. If you want to go and find out where the Wild Bus will be, you can go to nwib.org, and which is the Northwood, and you know what I'm saying, you can find out where the bus will be.
Okay, all right. Well, one of the things that seems to be clear is there are a lot of jobs out there now. There are a lot of, the economy is really booming. So the bus is going to be booming too, because there are a lot of people looking for jobs. People now have the ability to sort of, you know, pick and choose better than they used to, because the economy is really, really booming. So, and I'm so happy that this program is out there. It's been very innovative. And we'll have to check back with you in a few months to see how things are going. But at least for today, we were able to get the information out. And again, we so appreciate you coming on to spend time with us on our State of Newark Report, which we have the first Monday of every month here on WBAI 99.5 FM. So again, Mr. Deputy Mayor, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay. And to our listening audience, we apologize for that interference. There are different things I have to do to remember before going on the air, one of them of which is to cut off my phone, which I forgot to do. But that's okay. It's really not okay, but just giving you a quick explanation. Well, next, we want to also, again, great, great interview. And we're ready to go with our next guest coming on board. As many of you know, we're deeply involved with reparations work around the country, and we're delighted that WBAI has actually supported that work. We had a huge summit here a couple of years ago. WBAI covered it wire to wire, and occasionally we like to give updates, particularly from those organizations and individuals who are playing a leading role in the process of achieving reparations. And one of those individuals is the national co-chair of the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America, that is in COBRA, our legacy organization. That is Cam Howard, and he's been kind enough to take out time from his extremely busy schedule, because I work with him, so I know how busy he is, to be with us this afternoon. Cam Howard, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Hey, Dr. Daniels, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, it looks like reparations is a idea, an issue whose time has come. And we really, really appreciate you and in COBRA for helping to keep the idea vibrant and alive, even through the difficult times, the ups and downs. Certain issues have never gone away. And COBRA has always made sure that reparations was on the agenda, even in those periods when people wanted to not maybe pay attention or be focused on it, or when elected officials and others were really maybe not tuned in. And COBRA, we could always count on. So I'm wondering whether you would describe for our audience, first of all, I referenced H.R. 40 in the introduction earlier, the differences between the original H.R. 40 and the bill that is now before the Congress, because I think some people have not yet appreciated what's about to happen. So I want you to talk about the old bill and the new bill briefly.
Well, thank you, Dr. Daniels. And certainly to have a new bill, we have to thank you as well, because, you know, you convened the National African American Reparations Commission back in 2015. And in that time, at our first meeting, H.R. 40 came up, and we had determined, and COBRA had determined at that time, that the bill as it was written was obsolete. As most people would refer to it as a study bill, it was designed to study whether or not there were continued injuries among current living people of African descent after it studied the period of enslavement and Jim Crow, then determined if there was continued injury, and if so, make some recommendations to Congress. The new bill, you know, we had ascertained that, understood that there had been a tremendous amount of research already done that indicated, in fact, that we were also harmed. We suffered current injuries as a result of the period of enslavement, the period of Jim Crow segregation. And with the new bill, we also look at the period post-Jim Crow, post-1965, into the current. So the bill looks at those three periods. It begins with the understanding that there is continued injury, and it mandates Congress, mandates the commission to develop remedies across a wide range of areas to address those remedies. So we deem it a remedy bill as opposed to a study bill, although studying is a component of that, and the direction of the study would be to quantify how much of the injury exists in these various areas, education, health, wealth, criminal justice, et cetera, what NCOBRA calls the five injury areas, peoplehood, health, education, criminal punishment, and wealth and poverty. And it will look at other things as well. But that's really the gist of the new bill. It must develop remedies to address the injuries, current injuries.
And describe for us just how close we are, because some people never believe that, some people we had to persuade. There were many, many people who contributed over the years to just organizing us. I mean, getting us to either believe in reparations was one challenge, but even if you believed in it, there were some people who said, this is fantasy. It'll never happen. I mean, why are we wasting time fighting for reparations and so forth? But we have been saying that in this period, I've never, ever seen anything quite like it. And the NCOBRA Legislative Commission is in the thick of H.R. 40. So just tell us how close we are to actually getting the bill that will establish a commission to study and develop reparations proposals for African Americans actually enacted either by legislation or executive order. How close are we?
So we are extremely close, Dr. Daniels. When the bill is introduced in the House of Representatives, it takes a simple majority. There's 435 congresspersons, so it takes 217 plus one, a simple majority to get it passed out of Congress, out of the House, and then the bill goes to the Senate. Right now, we have 195 co-sponsors to the bill. We have an additional 17 congresspersons who say they will vote yes if it comes to the House, and then the bill sponsor. So we're right at 214 votes, yes votes. So that means we only need four to five votes, if we, give or take, to get this bill passed out of the House. This is phenomenal. Never have we been this close to having a one of the chambers of Congress pass legislation. The last time that happened, legislation for redress was during the Reconstruction, when they passed strong civil rights legislation, 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment, and 15th Amendment. We're at that particular point in America, especially when it comes to Black America and the issues we face, as we were at that particular time. This is an extremely historical moment, and we're, as I said, four votes short of getting this bill passed out of the House. And then, it's our task, understanding that in the Senate, you need more than a simple majority, and you need a filibuster-proof majority, which is about 60 votes. So we don't believe we can get that passed in the Senate. However, we would then be able to pivot to the president saying, hey, your Congress has passed this bill out of the House. The Senate, would pass it if it was didn't have to experience a filibuster. But all the leadership in the Democratic Party in Congress wants this bill to pass. Now it's up to you to deliver what your party wants and what the promises you made during your run for president. Because the president did state that he was in favor of H.R. 40 moving forward during his bid for presidency. Since that time, he says he favors a study. But we will definitely push for H.R. 40 like commission at the executive level.
And Cam, just describe, because I remember, to be honest about it, and you would think I would sort of not be as excited and so forth and so on, but I got to tell you, when we just got to the point where it was voted out of committee, I was telling people it was like Emancipation Watch Night. You know what I mean? We were all waiting, and Cobra had it wasn't a watch party, I don't guess, but and Cobra convened a meeting, and we were going waiting, and we were so excited, when it just got out of committee. I mean, can you describe what it will mean when it actually, when it actually passes the House of Representatives?
Yeah, that was an historical night because, you know, the April 14th of 2021, it was an historical night. It was the bill was marked up in Judiciary, and the Republican Party did everything they could to keep whatever they were debating, the legislation they were debating before that bill was supposed to come up. They did everything that they could to keep that going on and on and on. So it was actually midnight in certain areas when that particular bill came up for discussion and vote in the Judiciary Committee. And it made it out of committee the first time in the 32 years that it had been introduced. So it was an historical night, and we were definitely ecstatic, you know, because now it's going to the House, it's going to the House. And so it hasn't made it to the House, but it's about to go to the House. And when it does, man, it's going to, that's really an exciting, a really important historical moment as well. Again, like I said, this country has not endeavored to address the issue of harms that it committed against our people ongoing for 400 years and have never really dealt with it in a way to redress all of it. And so this will be the major step that this can that has been kicked down the road since 1865, they will definitely have to deal with it. And, you know, it is a monumental testament to the hard work of over a century of activists, you know, going back to 1865, going back to Callie House, going back to Marcus Garvey, going back to Peterson when he filed the We Charge Genocide, going back, you know, to the Nation of Islam when they raised it up as an issue, and all the others, you know, historically, reparations, Ray Jenkins, Congressman Conyers. There have been so many people who have been fighting for this issue and finally to get it to the point where this nation will actually debate this issue of redress on the floor of Congress. It'll be an historical moment and vindication of all of the work that we have done to this point.
Now, speaking of continued harm, and Coburn recently took a milestone step in issuing a report, and you certainly have talked about it. I just always think of Nana Patricia Newton, the who has made her transition, our beloved ancestor, who was the chief executive officer for Black Psychiatrists in America, who talked about the cross-generational epidemic harm that has been created by, you know, enslavement and the whole, all of the trauma that we've taken. So, but Nkoba recently actually took the step of getting a study out that validates that we already sort of knew it, but you took the step of having an actual study done. Talk to us about that study and how can people get a copy of it?
Sure. So definitely go to NCOBRAonline.org/harm report/, or just go to NCOBRAonline.org and you'll see a tab that says the harm report. So yeah, we've intensified our demand for reparations with the introduction of this report. We commissioned the Kennedy Kregear Institute, which is affiliated with Johns Hopkins University Medical Institution. We wanted to get a major, quote-unquote, mainstream medical institution to take a look at and review the existing science out there on this issue of transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. And basically what that means is that future generations can be impacted by historical trauma at a chemical level that affects their DNA and it's passed down to, you know, future generations. And so, you know, like back in the, probably around the early 2000s, they were looking at why descendants of grandchildren of Jewish Holocaust survivors had higher rates of illnesses, so-called lifestyle illnesses, strokes, heart attacks, things like that, things that really are a result of a particular lifestyle. And their peers whose grandparents did not have, did not go through the Holocaust, did not have the same level of injury, although they had the same lifestyle. They ate the same foods. They smoked the same as they smoked. You know, they smoked at the same level. They may have drank at the same level. There was nothing in their lifestyle that was different other than their grandparents experienced the Holocaust and the other ones did not. And so they were able to see that through molecular microscopic, looking at the, their cellular level on the microscope, they were able to determine that there was an epigenome, part of the gene, that had been chemically modified as a result of the historical trauma, and that modification was what was passed down generationally. So with in 2005, the federal judge in the federal court case that we filed for reparations stated that we were too far removed from the actual injury to bring up a lawsuit. We were not the ones who experienced this enslavement. We were not the ones who experienced, you know, lynching and so forth. And it wasn't our parents. You know, so we were too far removed. But what this science is saying is that we don't know how many generations the effect of historical trauma goes to. It could be two, it could be three, four, five, six. We don't know. But what we do know is that there has never been a time in this country where we have not experienced historical trauma. So what this new study is saying is that trauma, historical trauma happened to us and is still happening to us today, and that historical trauma has reduced physical effects within our genome, which allows for a heightened propensity of illnesses. And we all carry that modification. Whether or not we all get ill from it, it doesn't matter, but we all carry that modification. And so that's, you know, counters this whole argument that we were too far removed. It counters the argument that we should just get over it, just get on, if we're not affected by it, just move ahead, you know, leave that behind. It happened too long ago, I should say. So it counters all of that. And that has been one of the major arguments opposing reparations since I've been in the movement, and certainly going back as far as I've studied in the movement, that people were saying we're too far removed, get over it. And so the science is saying we cannot just get over it. We have to deal with it. And so this is a major contribution to the struggle for repair in this country.
And once again, to our listening audience, you're listening to Cam Howard. He is the national co-chair of in COBRA, and he's also a charter member of the National African American Reparations Commission. We're just describing a study. You can go to NCOBRA online and you can click harm study and you can actually read it and get that study. Cam, as you well know, we're working on a big piece out in Evanston, Illinois, coming up in a few days. Evanston, Illinois is the first city to have a citywide reparations program, $10 million over 10 years. There's that concretely reparatory justice policies in place and actual awards that are about to be made. I'm wondering whether you would talk to us about how important the Emerson model is and how important local reparations initiatives are around the country.
Sure, Dr. Daniels. You know, as I stated earlier when I talked about how important NARC was in revising H.R. 40, NARC took a strong stand early on with Evanston to attempt to certify it as a model for local reparations. And certainly Alderman Robin Simmons and the staff and council in Evanston have accepted and welcome NARC and NCOBRA's assistance in certifying Evanston as a model for local reparations across this country. And it's of major importance because right now, local reparations, aside from all of the action and energy around H.R. 40 that's really kind of laser-focused from, you know, a handful or two of organizations who are really, you know, pushing for this legislation on a national level, in the local reparations sphere, you have energy and excitement all around the country in these local spaces, and it is a monumental testament to how much people understand the need for redress in these areas, in these local areas, because the effect of the harms, the effect of Jim Crow, the effects of police terror and separate development that had happened in our communities is really felt on the local level. And the people are seeing that equity has no value unless you address and redress the issues of the historical harms that have been done. And so this is a major energy and exciting time in this country. And also, you know, what happens on local level furthers the push for the federal bill. And so what's going on in Evanston this weekend is just the next radical step in this whole process of synchronizing local reparations around the country. So Evanston led, NARC came in, certified, said certain things had to be in place. One, you know, that only the injured had to be the ones who stated what the remedy are. The injured have to actually be directing of the resources toward those repairs. Can't come from outside, can't come from the city, but the actual injured parties, those communities, Black people in those communities have to state what the remedy is and direct those remedies. In addition, it can't be just local public policy. It has to specifically be designed to address and redress injuries from these past historical harms. And so it's major that we have entities from around the country going to descend on Evanston this weekend. Over 45, I think, municipalities may be represented to help us synchronize local reparations, have a unified effort for local reparations around the country. It's an amazing time. And again, we give thanks to NARC and First Repair, who's led by Robin Simmons, and then COBRA is, you know, in there to support.
Right. Well, it is indeed a very exciting time, and we wanted to update our audience because, you know, sometimes people don't think that things are possible, and it's understandable. We've taken a lot of beatings, a lot of beat downs, but it's like Maya Angelou says, strong men and women keep coming, and because, again, of the work of NCOBRA and others that you have cited, Dr. Conrad Wuerl, who's now gone on to be an ancestor, and just so many others. And then people like Ta-Nehisi Coates, his work in Black Lives Matter, Movement for Black Lives. I mean, there's just so much energy out there now that we're in a period that we can't relax, obviously, because it's not over. But we are really pushing in a way that we've never seen in recent history and never been closer to a moment of reckoning when America will have to address these harms. And thoroughly, comprehensively, not only at the federal level, but from cities and locales all across this country, be able to address those harms. So thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels, and thank you for your great work and leadership.
All right, and we'll see you in a couple of days.
Yes.
All right, that was Cam Howard to our listening audience. He is the national co-chair of the National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America. We are on our way to Evanston, Illinois. There will be a symposium. You'll be actually able to go to the IBW website on this coming Friday evening. There will be a national town hall meeting. Danny Glover is coming in. We hope that the Honorable Sheila Jackson Lee, the lead sponsor, will be there. Eric Phillips, the vice chair of the CARICOM Reparations Commission, is coming in all the way from Georgetown, Guyana. And there will be people coming from, well, there'll be, it's a symposium, so it's a summit. It's not really a mass meeting. But we anticipate about maybe 50 representatives. That will probably mean maybe 25 or so cities will be represented. You know, places like Providence, Rhode Island, Asheville, North Carolina, Greensville, Greensboro, North Carolina, looking westward to San Francisco, Chicago, Detroit, Boston, Los Angeles, the university town that I'm always blanking on, Amherst, is moving forward. And there'll be representatives also from state initiatives because California has also passed a H.R. 40 Reparations Commission. And representatives from that commission will be joining us as well. So it will be an incredibly powerful moment. We hope to create a national network of people working on local reparations. Atlanta, Georgia, too, by the way. To create a resource center where people who are doing work on reparations can come and to both learn and share their experiences. Reparations is an idea, an issue whose time has definitely come. In order to join the conversation, we have about 10 minutes really left for our soapbox segment, but we can take a few calls. Call us at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We'd like to have you talk about reparations and H.R. 40 and the issues that we just discussed with Cam Howard, this milestone study showing that the harm that has been done to our people can be passed on across generations. You go to the website in Cobra Online and click harm study, and you can actually see this study. And that explains some of the predisposition of our people to actually have COVID and get COVID. Doesn't mean you will, but there's a certain predisposition to do it. And also other kinds of behavior that may be negatively impacted because of the trauma that has been passed on across generations. I know Professor Sir Hilary Beckles talks about this as well in terms of discussing why we have such a high level of diabetes and so many other ailments in disproportionate numbers. These disparities that come from to some degree from lack of opportunity and racism and poverty, but also because of past harm and trauma that's been passed on across generations. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We can take a couple of callers for you to give your comments or your observations on what you've heard in terms of reparations. Is it an issue whose time has come? I actually believe so. We've tried to give you indications about that. And what are your sentiments about reparations and the degree to which this can really, really finally be a part of the reckoning that is needed and must come in these United States of America? 212-209-2877. Again, we can squeeze in a couple of callers. We only got a few minutes, but we can squeeze in a couple. I really wanted to give Cam an opportunity to stretch out and give a good explanation of what is going on and updating you on H.R. 40. We're on the brink, and we wanted our listening audience to be aware of it. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We'll get you into the conversation. Also, previously, our earlier segment, delighted to have had on the program Rahman Mohammed, a longtime labor leader in the city of Newark, in the Central Ward. That's where all the action has been for so many years, where a lot of the resistance sort of emanated in terms of really trying to get Newark in the control of the people who live there as opposed to external forces. And under the administration of Roz J. Baraka, very creative, innovative programming, including workfare on wheels, the WOW program that we discussed, where he's actually got a bus taking the issue of training and employment to the people so that they can sign up, get training, get signed up for, and actually get some training on the bus. He talked about that particularly as it related to security matters. Okay, well, we got squeezed in a couple calls here. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, you're on the air. Speak right up.
Yeah, I'm calling to congratulate you for all the good work that you've been doing. This is Benjamin Afrifa.
Well, thank you much. Really appreciate it. That's it for today? All right. Well, we appreciate that. Let's go to another caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello.
You're on the air. Turn your radio down.
Good afternoon. You're hello.
You have hello? To turn your radio down. We have a delay
caller,
system,
please
so
turn
you're on
down
the air.
Your radio. Listen to the phone. Don't listen to the air.
I'm glad I reached you. I currently have a case for reparations for the residents in the Bronx in the Supreme Court in Manhattan. It has to do with accommodation recording and the illegal transfer of our properties by way of accommodation recording. The title companies are allowing people to file documents, and I'm taking this back 20 years. I have 20 years of cases. I would like to talk to you up here, get my number. Pro Se Legal is our organization. And if once this judge signs his declaratory judgment, we'll be able to restore about 375 homes in the New York City area This has been coming under the radar. Nobody wanted to give us any rhythm, but we kept the papers in the docket. I would like to give the index number over the air because it is public record, so people can look and see what we put into the evidence. And if they have similar evidence, they should submit it and get relief. Is that possible? Will you allow me to do that?
Yeah, I guess you can give the index number, but are you also working with any of the elected officials, either council, assembly, or senate?
I have on recording. I haven't gone on YouTube. I have on recording because I kept my phone on record. I went to all the key officials. I don't want to name any names, but I'll talk to you off the air. And I have them on recording telling me, similar like what you said, oh, this is going back too far. And these are black people telling me this. They didn't want to disrupt it. I'll say one name because he's already been shamed, Andy King. So a lot of the area, a lot of this stuff went on in his district. And he, in particular, along with his first in command, C. Williams, they just totally blocked the whole thing. So we just went pro se and did it. And now we are finally there. We got a declaratory judgment. It's a slam dunk situation. Brother, call me up. Let me talk to you up the air because right, I have the CFPB on it.
Okay, and, well, put the information as you can send it by way of WBAI, and they will get the information to me. But I am interested in taking a look at it. Really appreciate your effort. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We have time for one more call. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello, I'm on the air. Thank you.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just listening to the gentleman talking about the trauma that we received from my incarceration here in America. That's what it's been. But I used to do, like, blood analysis. And your cells have memory. Your cells have memories. Trauma goes into your cells, and it stays there.
Right.
If you're not detoxified, meaning into a situation where your cells can be cleansed, this trauma is passed down from generation to generation to generation.
Right.
It may take 300 years to get this trauma out. Out of your system if you're not detoxified.
Right.
You know, if your cells aren't cleansed. And we haven't had a chance to be in a situation where we can get cleansed because
right.
there's always
right.
been trauma.
Right. Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. I want to squeeze in one more caller. One more caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes.
Hello.
This is Elle from Long Island. Reparation is extremely serious. And it's a matter that we should not, although it's taken us decades, hundreds of years, in order to come to this point. I think we have to acknowledge certain things. Number one, Barbados has just claimed its true independence.
As a republic,
and
yes.
has made move to approach the world for reparations, has taken steps to basically demand that England pay reparations. Now, the Sir Hillary Beckel, I believe.
Yeah, Professor Sir Hillary Beckel heads up the CARICOM Reparations
okay.
Commission. Actually, the whole CARICOM Reparations Commission has made that claim.
The Thomas Sankara from
Burkina Faso.
Yes. And that it has been shown that his plane was pulled off of course. Okay? So he was murdered. I think we have to take in consideration.
Well, we have to take a lot of things in consideration. Unfortunately, we have to take in consideration now that we have to end the conversation because we're up against the clock. But your point is well taken. The Caribbean is in the forefront of the effort, and they have a CARICOM Reparations Commission. They are demanding reparations for Native genocide and African enslavement, and the National African American Reparations Commission is working really close with the CARICOM Reparations Commission. I just referenced the point that they're sending a representative. The vice chair of the CARICOM Reparations Commission will be in Evanston, Eric Phillips, for a symposium on municipal reparations, which is an indicator of that. So look, folks, great conversation, both in terms of our State of Newark report and the whole discussion of update on H.R. 40 and reparations. This is Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. This is the professor. We'll see you again next week here on this very same station.